There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. Welcome to a special podcast weekend edition number 555. And of course, this is February 26, 2012, Nasser. This is another great special interview about Aditya Patel, our Indian friend. Introduce this driver.
Yes, sir. Aditya Patel is from Chennai, which he tells me is the Detroit of India and also pretty big for software industry. And, you know, it was very convenient because time difference between California and India is like 12 hours plus, so morning time was evening there. So I would like to thank him very much for taking his time and doing this conversation. In India, he did some karting, and then this is, you know, I will say this, one of the few young drivers I have met who is smart not only in racing but also in head. Because what happened, he did some karting, and then he got an opportunity to go and race in Volkswagen Polo Cup. Did well, moved to Scirocco Cup, won races there, did 2 years of Scirocco Cup. And instead of, like, everybody wants to go and do Formula One racing and blow up millions of dollars, and, you know, it's so hard and political, Formula One, as we see every day. He has decided to concentrate on sports car racing and hopefully move up to into Le Mans type racing. And this year he is backed by Audi of India, and he will be doing GT3 racing with Audi. So I wish him all the best, and I cannot wait to see him race at Le Mans and other Spa-Francorchamps 1,000 kilometers. So all the best to him and my thanks to him. And hopefully as the season progresses, we'll have another update from Mr. Aditya Patel.
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Thanks. It's early morning here in California. Time for some chai.
Yeah, it's time for dinner in India.
Yes. I hope I'm not holding you back from your curry and spice.
No, I still got time.
Good, good. What part of India are you in as we speak?
I'm in Chennai, in Madras.
Yeah, which is your hometown, right?
Which is my hometown, yeah.
You know, Chennai is a big IT center, and what I find interesting is that almost all the Indian drivers I know, like yourself, Karun, Naren, and Arman Ibrahim, everybody seems to be from Chennai area.
Yep.
Is Chennai a big motorsports hub in India also?
Yeah, it is the biggest. It is the only motorsport hub right now, because in the past, most of the drivers, they came out of Coimbatore and Chennai. Everybody built cars, and then we had a racetrack here. And most of the biggest motoring activity would happen in Chennai. And I'm not sure if you know, they call Chennai the Detroit of India.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Yep.
But I did know it used to be known as Madras.
Oh, yeah, it was Madras. And now they've changed it to Chennai. And they call it the Detroit of India because of its car manufacturers and everything it's got to do with automobiles.
Well, that's very good. Very impressive. Okay, yeah. Now going to motorsports, which is why we are talking. 2011 was your third season of racing in Germany. Your background is karting and single-seater racing. How did you end up in tin tops in beautiful Deutschland?
Well, that's a long story. So, like, basically, like everybody else, when I started racing, my aim was to race single-seaters, like most Indian drivers. And I wanted to move up that ladder from Indian single-seaters to Formula BMW, maybe Formula Renault, and then to Formula 3, GP2, and so on. And but after I started Formula BMW, I did 1 year, which was pretty good. I started getting better towards the end of the year, and I was running in the top five, and I had some really good races towards the end of the year. My plan was to do one more year of Formula BMW, but I was really, really tight on budgets. So anyway, I went forward with that, with absolutely no plans of saloon cars. When suddenly one day, this guy from with Germany, he's a big industrialist in Germany. He supplies parts to VW and he's into a lot of industrial manufacturing and all things like that. So this guy called me and he said that he'd like to support me in the VW Polo Cup in Germany. From my point of view, this was a step back, but he said he'd sponsor it fully and I knew I was tight on funds in to do single-seaters in Formula BMW. I thought about it a bit for about a week, 2 weeks, spoke to my dad, spoke to my sponsors. This guy said that it would be a direct link for me to a manufacturer like VW, and especially in a country like India where it's growing, where VW is growing big time. So after thinking about it a bit, I thought nobody's gone that route and it's worth a try. I mean, when somebody's giving you something free in motorsport, I mean, there's no harm trying. If you don't like saloon cars, you might as well move back to a single-seater car. Then I went forward with it. In the beginning, it was a bit hard driving the VW Polo. But halfway through the season, maybe after 3 races or so, I was starting to get into the top 10 and I started to enjoy fights. I mean, you could get away with a lot of stuff in saloon cars. It was really close. Although the Polo was a bit slow and I was struggling to get to terms with the size of the car and the brakes and things like that. You know what it's like. You push much harder. You have that single-seater thing in you. But anyway, then the next year, they came out with the Scirocco Cup and VW India said they'd like me to do the Scirocco Cup, which wasn't fully sponsored, but I had a few sponsors. And then, I mean, by then I'd started enjoying saloon car racing. So I moved forward to the Scirocco Cup. And the first year on the Scirocco Cup wasn't too bad because right from the beginning, I was running in the top 10. I won a race. There were plenty of races where I was in the top 5. And we also had the concept of legends. So, which was pretty huge. I mean, I'd never imagined I'd be racing against guys like Martin Brundle, Johnny Herbert, Carlos Sainz, and names that we only seen on TV, on the internet, watch them race on TV. And for me to be racing against guys like that in only my 3rd year, just for experience or something else. And the Scirocco Cup was far more enjoyable than the Polo Cup. And it was a much more powerful car, so it's a good step in touring cars. So I thought, okay, why not do one more year of Scirocco Cup before I move forward? Because even though the pace was pretty decent in the Scirocco Cup, it always makes sense to do one more year to learn a lot more about the car. And you learn a lot more. Every race you learn a lot. So it just made sense to not throw away money by jumping into something huge and just spending 1 year in learning the trade. I mean, learning racing in Europe, basically.
Yeah.
And then the third year of Scirocco Cup. Sorry, tell me.
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah. So then the 3rd year in the Scirocco Cup was, the 3rd year in racing in Germany in the Scirocco Cup was a pretty good year. I mean, I aimed to be in the top 3 of the championship. And right through most of the championship, I was running 3rd. Except for after 1 race where I really lost out big time on points. And most of my finishes were in the top 4. I think I had 4 fourth-place finishes, 2 third-place finishes and a win. And a few fifth, I mean 1 fifth, 6th and something like that. There was 1 race where I got penalized, unfortunately, while I was running 2nd. So yeah, but that's racing. I mean, you look back at that and then you realize you've lost out a lot. But then at the end of the year, I enjoyed every bit of the Scirocco Cup. And I realized by doing this Scirocco Cup the 2nd time, I learned so much more that I would have never learned in any other series. I mean, any GT series or something like that. I mean, just basically the format of the Scirocco Cup helps you learn that much more the way it is.
You mentioned that Scirocco Cup was much more fun than Polo Cup. Apart from the power and a bigger car, what was the difference you felt between the two series?
Well, from the side of marketing, the way you look at it, VW was promoting the Polo Cup, but when they moved to the Scirocco Cup, they did it big. So the races were streamed live on the internet, live on TV in close to 50 countries. They invited legendary drivers, so we had the chance to interact with them, talk to them about how they went about their career. Since most of them were touring car drivers, and lots of them were Formula One drivers who had moved to touring cars, so it was a good opportunity to really know what they've gone through in their career. Good opportunity to race against them. Then another factor was the fact that the cars ran on biofuel, so it was an eco-friendly championship. And in this day and age, everybody is only looking at eco-friendly stuff. So I mean, that way it was a good boost. There was a lot of publicity involved apart from the racing side of it. As far as the racing was concerned, it is a junior touring car championship, and it's also a championship where people want to get noticed. So we've had drivers with us who've raced all kinds of championships. There was one driver who had done the Renault V6 World Series championship a few years ago, one driver who raced in the Porsche Carrera Cup in Europe a few years ago. There's another driver who was a really good driver, but struggling to find funds to really progress in motorsport, and he found that he'd do a full year of testing in a, I think he tested in a Renault Megane, a full year, and then he came to the Scirocco Cup just to win it, and he did win the championship. Because when I spoke to him, he said that after watching the Scirocco Cup in the first year, he realized if you want to get noticed, that's where you have to be. And now BMW is really boosting him. I mean, they're really helping him move forward because he is an extremely talented, dedicated driver. And another driver from the UK, he's also come from. He did a few races in the British Touring Car Championship before he did the Scirocco Cup. So, I mean, I thought he was a junior driver, but then when I looked him up and I saw that he's done two rounds in the British Touring Car Championship, I realized that, okay, so this is what the Scirocco Cup is about because they are good drivers. They are struggling a little bit to find money. The Scirocco Cup is pretty cheap, so it helps them. It's a stepping stone for them to get noticed. And now he's driving the Porsche Carrera Cup and he's 80% funded by Porsche. He just has to find 20%.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, that's the Scirocco Cup, and I mean, Audi India is supporting me now after looking at my performance last year. So yeah.
Good, good. I have to say, you made a very smart move, and like you said, you don't want to pass out on a free. You don't pass out if you're a smart guy. You don't pass out on a free lunch. So why
Yeah,
pass out on a
exactly.
free sponsorship, right? That was,
Exactly.
yeah. Question for you: when you first went from India and racing in South Asia to Europe. What was the impression of the depth of racing talent between the two regions?
Well, it was a bit different. I mean, when I raced in Southeast Asia, it was there were a lot of drivers who came from America, from the UK, from Europe. But I mean, they're all on the single-seater route, and it was more like since the championship was run by teams. I mean, it's different. It's not like what I went to in Europe. There, it's all a single make VW. All the cars run by the same person. All the drivers are basically tutored by the same people, and it was different. As far as the quality of drivers go, well, I can't say Asia was bad because Asia also had some really good drivers. It's just that in that particular championship, because of the costs and it being Southeast Asia, it's not very cheap. It's very expensive. So we had maybe 14 drivers or 13 drivers, and out of which there were two drivers from Australia, three from South Africa, one from America, one from Switzerland. So you don't see too many Asian drivers in this championship. I think we've only what, four drivers from Asia, four drivers in the championship. So yeah, you can't really say there's too much difference between the drivers because some of the drivers I raced with are doing GP3 now and they're doing pretty well. So like Rio Haryanto did reasonably well in GP3. Gabby Chavez was reasonably well in GP3. Marlon Stockinger also did. I mean, he was in the midfield, and then in the preseason testing this year, he was in the top five right through. So it was always good quality of drivers. The previous year, Daniel Ricciardo raced for the same team that I raced for, and which really worked well for me in my basics because all the data, everything I learned was from his data, the basics of driving the Formula BMW car, like the braking, the cornering, the technique.
Did the team even at that time tell you that Daniel is a very good talent?
They did tell me. They said that they hadn't seen a driver like Daniel before that.
Wow.
It was the best. He was by far the best driver they'd had.
Yeah, very impressive. Okay, now last year, the season opener at Hockenheim, you were fourth, and you were also fourth in the next round, which was at Spielberg, the beautiful Red Bull Ring. What is
Yes.
your impression of this track? You know, in days gone by, it was a great Formula One track. Then it was called Österreichring.
Yeah. I
What was
mean,
your.
I quite love the track because it was, after Nürburgring, it's my second favorite track on the calendar. It's the elevation change, the fact that if you go there and look at it and you see the backdrop, you won't see a track where it's just surrounded by mountains. And if you walk up to the top of the second corner and look down, it's extremely steep. You're looking really, really way down at the start line. It's like you're standing on top of a hill and you're looking down at the start line. And basically the whole layout of the track was just something else. It had corners for everybody, and fast corners, slow corners, uphill, downhill, everything you can think of, basically.
Yeah.
I have no idea why they scrapped that from Formula One.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's called $35 million that Bernie wants.
Ah, 35 million.
Yeah.
Okay, but now that Red Bull's got the track, I'm sure they'll do something good with it.
Yeah. You had fourth place finish in four outings at Lausitzring. Yeah. Was it getting frustrating not to make it to the podium and coming so close?
Yeah, I mean, it all started at Hockenheim, the first race where I was running third till the second to last lap. And the driver behind me was Nicola Larini. And he's raced World Touring cars, right?
Oh, so, I know him very well.
Exactly. I'm sure you know. So the advantage he had was he knew how to save his tires in a front-wheel drive touring car. And by the end of the race, he had caught up with me. He was right behind me. I think in the beginning, he was maybe 3 seconds behind me at one point. And then five laps, six laps, he just roped me in slowly, slowly. I maintained pace with the front two guys. We were, all three of us were the same pace. But we were just like going in a procession while he was catching us lap after lap. I think it was just all saving his tires. And then when he came, being a legend driver, the way I looked at it was, okay, the podium is gone, but I'm not going to lose out on points. He takes the podium, but I take the points. And it's the first race of the championship.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to really throw it away because we've got the push-to-pass system. And he definitely had one more boost more than me. So when he came alongside me, it was like, okay, it's your place. Take it and go.
Yeah, smart move. Round four was at the Nürburgring. Do you like street circuits?
Well, I do generally like street circuits, but not Nürburgring.
Why?
Because Nürburgring is not exactly a circuit. It's got two hairpins and a chicane. So right from the beginning, I've never really liked Nürburgring, but I mean, it's okay. It's not really my favorite track on the calendar.
Okay, fair enough. Your first podium in 2011 came at the real ring, the Nürburgring. What's it like being on podium at one of the most famous racing tracks in the world?
My first race win abroad was at the Nürburgring the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to Nürburgring, I qualified second. And again, that race was a bit of a mess because they started us on wet tires. And I was one of the few drivers who would drive on the hard roll bar when the conditions were dry while everybody else was soft. And the rules were, because it's a single make championship, the rules were by the consent of all drivers that if it's a wet race, we all run on the soft roll bar. Fair enough. We all went out for a wet race on wet tires, but the track dried up and I was on the soft roll bar, which didn't strike me at all right through the race. It didn't strike me for 2 weeks after that I was on the soft roll bar. But anyway, I led that race for 9 laps or 10 laps. And then finally, the championship leader, he dived in and pushed me wide. I got him back and then he got me back again. And while we were battling, the third place guy got up. And then when this guy passed me, he took his chance and he passed me. So I lost from first to third in literally no time. But all in all, it was a great race. And to be on the podium in Nürburgring is something else. I'm not sure if you have any racing history or such, but I'm sure you know what it feels like to be on the podium.
Well, you know, I know a little bit of motor racing history, but I've never been a race car driver. But I was at the Nürburgring some years ago. I took with a friend of mine, we went to different parts of the old section. But just to be, I was in the paddock area, and there was not a major race going on there, some motorcycle testing. But like you said, just to be there is a great, great feeling. I mean,
it's a great feeling, especially because of the history. It's incredible. Yeah.
And, some years ago, I've been there, I believe, twice. Once I went there and drove through the town called Adenau.
Yeah, I went to Adenau, yeah.
Yeah, I could not believe that they would build a track here, 70, 80 years ago, how remote and fantastically beautiful it is. Great. Mm. Okay, next race was at another track which I like very much. And actually, this is the first Grand Prix track I ever visited in my life, Brands Hatch. A beautiful setting. How did that weekend go for you last year?
It was okay. I mean, Brands Hatch, we ran the Indy circuit, which is just four corners. And they had, I think, 28 cars on the grid. So when you go out in qualifying, you have to be spot on your first or second lap because of the traffic situation. Unfortunately, I kept getting caught in traffic right through, and I think my sixth or seventh lap was my quickest lap. And I have to say I was lucky to be in the top 10 in qualifying. I think I was 10th. Because if I hadn't got that lap, because even though I did overtake someone on the lap, I was 10th. If I hadn't got that lap, I'd be 17th or 18th on that grid. And I had a good start, so I was up to 6th on the second corner. But somebody went off the track and came across the front of my car, which caused a little bit of damage. But nevertheless, I managed to hold on. It was from there on with that damage, they stopped. They did stop that race, but there's no, once they stopped the race, we're on the line, there's no really repairs that can be done. But it didn't really bother me, and then we just carried on with the race. There was nothing I could do to keep up with the guys in front. But I did manage to keep the guy behind me, and I think I finished 7th finally in that race, or 6th, somewhere there. So overall, it wasn't a very exciting race, but I managed to hold on and not lose too many points there.
Okay, next round was at Oschersleben. The race was 13 laps, but lucky for you, very close finish to score your first win of the season. How does this win compare to your first victory in this series?
I have to be frank about this because this was the second race and it was a reverse grid. I goofed up a little bit on qualifying again. Again, it was a situation where I was lucky to get that one good, decent lap to get me in the top 10, to get me 7th on the grid. And then for a track with the nature like Oschersleben, we went a little bit, kamikaze on the setup because it's got long corners, very long corners. And somebody suggested that we go high on the tire pressures in front, a little higher than what we normally run. And we listened to them and we did that. And then after a point, I mean, in the beginning, I was really quick because I guess it was just that advantage over everyone else in the beginning. But after a point, the tires just really faded away and I finished 8th in the first race. Or 9th in the first race, in fact, because there was a guest driver who passed me on the last lap. But fortunately in Oschersleben, the guest drivers weren't meant to race on Sunday. They were only for Saturday. And then I was 8th, which meant I was on pole. And by then I knew my second. I knew I had the pace at Oschersleben also, because I've driven there and I've always been the pace of the top three. So, and also another thing that was fortunate was it rained. And for some reason, I've always had good finishes in the rain. I don't know how, but yes, I've always been running somewhere close to the front in the rain. And yeah, I mean, it was a very tight race. Started on the first lap, I got passed by Daniel Lloyd, but I passed him back on the last corner. And then I held a steady lead for about 8 or 9 laps, but the track began to dry. And the problem was, Daniel Lloyd was behind me watching my mistakes and he figured out immediately where the track was dry and where the track wasn't dry. Whereas I didn't have anyone to watch and it took me a little while to just figure that out. And in one lap of watching me, he caught me because he wasn't too far behind. And he caught me and he went past me and there were 3-4 guys in a line. So two of them went past me and they went down the main straight. They went into the first corner and they outbraked each other. And they pushed each other a bit wide and I went past them again. And from there on, it was just, 3 laps left and holding on to the lead. It doesn't sound very exciting, but if you saw it on TV or if you saw it live, it was an unbelievable race. I mean, for me, it was, the last 4 laps was just heart in the mouth feeling.
Now, are you with all these winnings like a real hero in India? And more importantly, when you go to, not many Indians are racing in 10 tops in Europe. Do a lot of Indian race fans show up at your races in Europe?
Not really. I mean, I have seen a few, but they've only been there for someone they knew in a Formula 3 team because, or things like that. I mean, there are a few Indian mechanics and they invite their friends. I have a few Indian friends studying there, so I call them over and things like that. You don't find Indian fans coming there just to watch me race. But one thing I did notice is that the German fans or the European fans are very enthusiastic about touring car races. They are really enthusiastic and it's unbelievable that they can actually find out exactly what you've done in your past and they come to you with scrapbooks that have got pictures of every form of racing that you've done and ask you to sign on all of them, which being an Indian in Europe is a great feeling because you see pictures of yourself in races that you've done even in India that you haven't seen, but these people have sourced these pictures out and brought them to you.
Yeah, there's a serious racing culture there. Okay, final race of the season was where the season began, Hockenheim Ring. Looking back on two seasons in the Scirocco R Cup, what was the main thing you learned from season one, which helped you to finish in the top five in 2011?
Well, again, heading into the final race, I made the most basic of errors because even though I'd done 2 years in the Scirocco Cup, 1 year in the Polo Cup, which all followed the same rules, I went into the final race only 3 points behind third place, which meant I had a good chance for third place in the championship. And I was quick in practice. I was the second fastest in practice, which put me in a good place for qualifying. But in maybe you can say in a little bit of my excitement, after practice, we have to mark our tires for qualifying and tell them what goes where. I took two old tires from Oschersleben and put them on the back of my car instead of using the two new tires that we had used in practice, which we had scrubbed. We basically used two new tires and scrubbed them in practice. I took those off the back of the car and put them on the stands and took the old tires and put them on the back of the car and didn't realize at all. It was just a mistake in writing the marking on the piece of paper. And I didn't realize this. I went out for qualifying and I was just not able to find any grip. The track temperatures were 0 degrees, minus one, something like that at 8 in the morning. And I just couldn't generate grip in the rear tires and managed to qualify 10th. And then I was foxed. I mean, I just didn't know what was wrong. I thought everybody's in the same situation. Everybody's got the same tires. Everybody's got the same grip situation, same time of day. I just thought there must have been something I've done terribly wrong, or maybe I tried too hard or something like that. And the race was at 4 in the evening. I stepped out to go to the car and my engineer tells me that, told me what I've done. He basically took me to the tires and he says, "What's that?" So I said, "That's an old tire." He says, "What's this?" I said, "That's a new tire." He says, "That old tire was on your car for qualifying." And then I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe I made that mistake in the last race of the year. I qualified 12th actually, not 10th, 12th. So, well, it was a good race from there. I qualified 12th, finished 6th, set the fastest lap of the race. From my point of view, it did end on a high because I managed to set the fastest lap and I passed quite a few cars. I had a really good race, lots of overtaking. It was lots of fun. But top 5 was great. I mean, you can't complain. When you know top 3 was there, but it's a European championship and it was an extremely closely fought championship with drivers of high quality. So yeah, I have no complaints. I enjoyed every bit of it.
No, top 5 is great. Now, late last year, you also drove an Audi R8. Tell us about this car, and I hear you will be driving this beast in 2012.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. Basically, VW Motorsport gave me the opportunity to test the car. They invited me over to Germany and said it's absolutely free. I mean, why not? Why wouldn't I do it? They told me to take care of my airfare. So I did that, went there. It was an unbelievable car to drive because you'd think a 550 bhp car is a monster, a real monster. It looks like a monster. But when I got in the car, set 3-4 laps, I started to learn the brakes, I started to learn the car. And maybe after about 15 laps in the car, 20 laps in the car, I started to feel really comfortable. It was more of you come to the corner, you brake, you turn in where you have to turn in and just point it and accelerate out of the corner. It was, well, being my first day in the car, obviously I couldn't take it to the limit, but it was just an unbelievable experience and I'm really looking forward to racing it this year with the support of Audi India. So hopefully the plan is to do a championship in Europe or a few endurance races in Europe, if not a championship this year. The whole idea is the GT3, I'm planning to do it for the next 3 years or more. And this being my first year in GT3, I thought it would make a lot of sense to, more than anything else, get a lot of track time in that car rather than try and fight. Because it's not really logical to really, you know, you can't really win many races in your first year in a GT3 car by just outright taking part in any championship where you don't get any track time. So I thought it would make sense to do a few endurance races here and there, get a lot of track time, put more money into practicing and do a few races in Asia as well, and then take it from there next year and move forward.
No, you have a good plan. You go step by step, get the mileage, as they say. Talking of endurance racing, do you know who your teammate will be?
As of now, no. I've approached a few teams and there are drivers who have also approached a few teams. There are a few drivers who come to me who are also interested in doing GT3. So let's see. I mean, if the team that I've approached doesn't have a driver, then I know who I can suggest to them. So let's see.
Okay, that's good. You know, if I can give you one idea, is what I would do is find the best Indian restaurant near Ingolstadt, and and invite Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich for some curry and chicken, not very spicy. And I would ask him, hey, is there any way you can help me race in the Le Mans 24 hours with any of the Audi cars?
Yeah, well, frankly, that is my plan for over the next 3 years, because Audi also runs GT3 cars in Le Mans. And for the next 3 years, at least, I'm not looking at sports cars, but I'm looking at moving forward in GT3 cars. And hopefully by the end of the third year, or in my third year, I'm looking at doing Le Mans 24 hours. And he has been spoken to, not directly by me, but by a team owner in Asia. So he's spoken to him about me, and Audi, the CEO of Audi India, has spoken to him about me, and they have started supporting me in a small way right now. But let's see, the next 2-3 years should be interesting.
Yeah, they not only have GT3 cars, they also have a lot of customer, teams that...
The driving experience,
It will be great to see you at Le Mans. Okay, now this is a very important question. Sebastian Vettel, and I'm sure you've heard of him, he says he does not need a manager because he can get to the track by himself. Do you have a manager, or are you also arriving at races by yourself?
Yeah, I do arrive at races by myself. I mean, my dad and I, we work together to set up where we're staying, how we get there, our transport. We do it by ourselves. And we don't have any, we haven't hired anyone to do this for us at all. You really don't need anyone to do it, at least. I assume that someone in Formula One would need someone to do it, but if you say Sebastian Vettel doesn't do it, I guess you don't really need anyone.
Yeah, and
it's pretty simple. I mean, I find it rather simple myself.
Yeah, he's very proud of saying that. Okay, during the racing season, are you based in Germany or are you flying in from India for the races?
I fly in from India because I have a sponsor that's an airline. I don't know if you've heard of Jet Airways.
Of course, I've heard of Jet Airways.
So Jet Airways is my sponsor. And I get free tickets to fly to Germany, and it's an 11-hour flight, so it's not too bad. It's just overnight or through the day. It's one day, basically.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad your sponsor is Jet Airways, not Kingfisher Airlines.
Not Kingfisher, because they don't really take off anymore.
Oh, yeah. Are they totally out of business now?
Not really, but my last few flights within the country, I've definitely not booked Kingfisher, because you can't really trust them right now.
Yeah, no, I understand. Okay, you mentioned your dad. He was also involved in motorsports. Can you tell us a little bit about his racing activities?
Well, he started mainly as a tuner and also a driver, because he had his own workshop. He had a lot of interest in engines and a car on the whole. And then he was interested in driving them. So he started with rallying, and then he started with racing on the circuit. So he's raced. They used to have this track called Sholavaram in Chennai. And they had many, in those days, they had Formula 3 cars, Formula 2 cars, and they used to build some unbelievable cars. So basically what he would do was, he was a builder and a driver himself. So he'd build his, he did a lot of touring car races. So he built his car and he'd take it to the track, and he won many races, he won many rallies. And in those days, I think if you look at most of the Indian drivers, they all raced and rallied. Unlike now, it's either racing or rallying. So he was one of those guys who did many races, many rallies. And then I guess just watching him while I was growing up, going to the racetrack, it just interested me into racing. And when I was old enough, I had to give it a shot.
Yeah, good. And you're giving it a very good shot, and I wish you all the best.
Now, thank you.
Sure. Karun and Naren, we mentioned that they are from your town. Are you buddies with them?
I know Karun very well, because Naren is from Coimbatore, actually. And Karun is from Chennai. And we go to the same gym together, and I mean, Karun's a different age group, so we don't really hang out together, but we have a very good rapport with each other. We share a lot of information with each other about what we can do in our racing, because now he's doing sports cars, and we were working together and going and meeting people at Audi and things like that. So yeah, we have a good rapport together. I raced for Naren's team when I raced in the national championship, so I do know Naren really well, but Naren's got a different agenda. He's more into the whole Formula One thing and just driving Formula One. Karun's more of an overall type of person. You know, he tries a lot of different stuff. So he's a bit different that way.
And people enjoy his work as a broadcaster also, and I'm included in that group.
Yeah, everybody does.
Yeah. Okay, now tell us a little bit about Aditya Patel, the young man, not the racer, your taste in music, what kind of food you like, and anything most racing fans don't know about. What is the most thing that racing thing people don't know about you that you want them to know about you?
Well, one thing I noticed when I talk to people is that when I told them I went to college, they assumed I did something like correspondence, which meant I sat at home and did private tuitions and then got my degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually went to an everyday college. I didn't have any special quota for sports or anything because they didn't recognize motorsports in that college. And so, yeah, I mean, I studied like a regular college student. I made sure my attendance was as good as it could be because here we have a minimum of 60% attendance, because if you have less than 60%, then they won't let you write your exams.
Oh.
And so I did that. Then another thing I like doing is traveling. So all my friends, my college mates and me, we made a lot of road trips to nearby cities, nearby hill station. Whenever we got a day off, we'd drive to a place called Pondicherry, which is about 2 hours away. And things like that. We like traveling a lot. So we made a lot of road trips and basic things, just hanging out like any college student would do, which most race drivers say they haven't done because they don't go to college.
Yeah, very few of them.
Very few go to college, yeah.
Yeah, great.
And yeah, music-wise, I'd listen to anything that sounds good. Don't really like rap and hip-hop. A few hip-hop songs.
What's up with that, my man?
I don't know. Just never really liked that.
Okay, great. Okay, Aditya, great talking to you. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Please keep us posted on your racing activities. And finally, we have listeners all over the world, including India. Would you have a message for our listeners?
If you like something, go ahead and do it.
Very brief and very simple.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time for me to go to my real job and time for you to get some dinner.
Yep, I will do that.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You're welcome. You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Aditya, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.